Okay, so thanks. First of all, thanks to the organizers for inviting me. I'm a bit different from the rest of the audience here, as I'm still a spectroscopist. So I'll talk about the rapid neutron capture process and what we can learn about it from metal poor stars, and hopefully also tie some strings to the event that we've all been talking about. So when we have this neutron star merger, which we seem to all agree that it produces some R process elements, some heavy elements, these get ejected into the interstellar medium, and then they get captured in the next generation of stars that are formed. And if these are low mass and long lived, then I can observe them at some point. And from the abundance pattern that I find of these stars, I can hopefully say something about what happened during this event and what kind of what nucleosynthesis went on. Well, I can actually do this. Okay, so the rapid neutron capture elements, or the neutron capture elements, this is just a cut-up of the periodic table. So these are the elements that we're interested in, from just above the iron group and all the way up to the lanthanides, or so the actinides that we have here. And what I have down here is all of these elements as a function of atomic number. This is solar system abundance pattern. But what I've highlighted here are the elements that we, in principle, can get from the stellar spectrum, optical stellar spectra and UV. So the blue ones are the ones that we can get from the ground, and the red ones we need to go to space, so basically the Hubble telescope, as long as that lasts. So as you can see, we're actually pretty well covered. We can get both the light ones, we can get the lanthanide region, and we can also get all the way up to the actinides. And I say in principle, because I'll show you later that this is very optimistic. But if we have good data, then we may actually be able to get there. But what kind of stars do we actually want to look at? Because not all stars are suitable for this investigation. So if we have, down here we have the spectrum of the sun, which you can see is very blended and lots of lines. And the abundances that we have in the sun is the result of multiple enrichment events. So it's a mixture of lots and lots of neutron star mergers, probably, lots of supernovae and other types of stuff. So we're all the way down here, where we've had lots of adding up of elements. So we want to go back in this chain, and we want to go somewhere up here, where we have only had a few enrichment events. And so so the abundance pattern that we see in the stars is a signature of just one or two events, and we can actually say this is what happened. And for a more practical reason, this spectrum is really hard to do anything with. But when we go back in time and we get more and more metal poor, when I say metal poor, I mean iron content, respect to the sun, you see we get these very nice clean spectra with single clear absorption lines that we can actually measure abundances from. But we also don't want to get too metal poor, because then we don't have any lines. So we need something to work with. So we need sort of a little bit of metals, but not a lot of metals. And then we can try and figure out what actually happened in the very early times of the universe. So what do we do when we want to look at the R process? Well, we use europium as a tracer of the R process in stellar spectra. Europium is mainly produced in the rapid neutron capture process. At least at low metallicity, all of the europium is from the rapid neutron capture process. So what you have here is the europium or iron abundances with respect to the sun as a function of metallicity for metal poor stars from the SAGA database, which is a huge database of metal poor stars. And as you can see, when we go to low and lower metallicity, we get a huge spread in the abundances. We actually have over two decks spread in the abundances. And some of this is due to the incomplete mixing that we have in the early universe. But some of this is probably also due to multiple R process sites. So we have different sites that produce different amounts of R process elements. And one of the things we have are these very strongly enhanced R stars up here that has a lot of europium. And those are the ones that we are very interested in, because those are the ones that can tell us something about the R process. And this is such a star. You have the red spectrum is a the red spectrum is a normal metal poor star, and the blue spectrum is an R-process lens, so it has this huge ropium line, and you have all of these other lovely R-process elements that we can get abundances from. So, because I mean the normal metal poor stars, there's no way we're going to get huge Kepler element abundances for that. So we need this huge enhancement to get the R-process abundance pattern that we want to have to say something about the R-process. And we separate these stars into two groups. We have the R2 stars, which are very strongly enhanced in R-process elements, and then we have the R1 stars, which just show a mild enhancement. The first star that we detected of these R2 stars is this CS22892055 or 052. It was actually detected, or it was actually discovered in a survey which was carried out at Las Campanas Observatory. So we have a pretty good history of R-process detections down there. And the first spectrum they got of the star, they derived elements for a bunch of Newton Kepler, or abundances for a bunch of Newton Kepler elements over here. And then they decided to see if they could match this to the solar system R-process abundance pattern, which is the solid line. The dotted line is the S-process abundance pattern. And as you see, that's actually quite a good fit. And later on, when they got better spectrum, a higher resolution, higher signal spectrum of the same star, you see this excellent fit with the solar system R-process abundance pattern again, at least for this middle region from about barium to hafnium. So for the lanthanides, we see a really, really good fit in this very old star to the solar system R-process abundance pattern. In the light end and in the heavy end, we have a little bit more scatter, and I'll come back to that. So people thought these are interesting. I mean, most of you guys are interested in the R-process from this summer, but we've been interested in it for about 20 years. So we're also excited about the event this summer because this tells us where these things came from. But people started looking for these stars, and Paul Bachmann carried out a survey in 2005 where he looked at about 250 metal poor stars, and he found 8 of these highly R-process enhanced stars. So these are rare. They're not everywhere. They're hard to find. He found a few more of the mildly R-process enhanced stars. And today we have a sample about 30 of the R2 stars. This is not a lot, and this is not going to get us very far, as I will show you. We have quite a few more of the R1 stars, but since they're not quite as strongly enhanced, we can't get the full abundance pattern for these as we can from the R2 stars. So just to go back to this one, this very optimistic sequence of or list of elements that I'm promising you that I can get from these spectra. And we can for some of them, but let's just have a look at some of the lines. We have some of the easy elements. Well, I should say that this is, I mean, we need high resolution, high signal noise spectra at least. We need resolution of 80,000. We need signal noise of above 100 in the very blue end to get any of these elements. So this is a lot of telescope time, a lot of observations. But we do have some elements that are fairly easy. And these are elements like, can't even read on the slides here. We have strontium. Is that strontium? I should wear my glasses. Anyway, we have strontium, barium, europium. Those are kind of easy elements. Actually, most of the lanthanides have nice, clean, single, strong lines that we can get. And if we have really, really good spectra, then we can even try to do some isotopic ratios of stuff like europium. Then there are the more challenging ones. These are mostly elements that have weaker lines, that have blended lines. And these are some of the light Newton Kepler elements. We have silver and palladium up here, I think. And then also some of the third peak R-process elements. Also, gets this is basically kind of blend and then weak lines. So while we can get most of the elements in the lanthanide region, when we go to the two sides, the heavy and the light, and it gets more challenging and more difficult. And if we go to the even heavier ones, like lead and thorium, we run into some heavy blending. Lead is very heavily blended with carbon features, so if we have carbon, which we also often have in these metal poor stars, then we have problems. Thorium, in principle, has this nice single feature, but we need a very high enhancement in Thorium for this feature to show up, so that's also kind of hard. Then there are the really, really difficult ones. And this is basically uranium. So the uranium feature is this little thing up here. Let's zoom in over here. So uranium is, this is the only uranium we have, line we have in the optical spectrum. And in these two stars, the uranium is enhanced with about 100 times. So the uranium to iron abundance is about 100 times of the solar uranium to iron abundance. So these are really strongly enhanced in uranium. And this is all we get. So you see, this is really hard. We have about 5 stars at the moment where we have uranium abundances measured. These two are actually not too bad. This is where it gets even worse. Because you can argue if this is actually a uranium feature or if it's just signal to noise issues. But we do have some abundances. So let's have a look at how that actually looks. So this is, I've gathered the abundance patterns that we have for 15 of the R2 stars where we have the most abundances. For the rest of them, we have probably 5 or less abundances for newly captured elements, so we can't really say much about those. But for these around 15 stars, so this is the absolute abundances scaled to the europium, which is there. So all of the europium is put in the same spot. And then, again, we have the solar system R-process abundance pattern. And as you can see, we again have this pretty good match to this middle region from barium to hafnium, roughly, as we also saw in the first star process and hence star. So we need some kind of, a process which can spit out these elements in this same abundance pattern all the time, basically. And that could be neutron star mergers. They seem to be the best suggestions for doing this. Looking at the light ones, there's quite a bit more scatter. Looking at the heavy ones, we also have a lot more scatter. So the fact that we have this robust area, but with scatter in both ends, suggests that we may have more than one process that contributes to these elements, or that we have varying outputs from the one process we might have. At least we need something that in some cases produces more or less of the light compared to the middle ones, and in some cases produces more or less of the really heavy ones compared to this middle region. And this is just the same plot. I just spread it out all the different stars, and basically just to show you that we have like 5 or something stars where we have abundances on the full range. So for most of the stars, we have a pretty good set of abundance in this middle region. But when it comes to the light ones, and especially when it comes to the heavy ones, we don't really have a good abundance pattern yet. So we need to work on that. But clearly, all of them seem to match the solar system abundance pattern really well in this middle region. One of the reasons why we have this scatter in the heavy end is because we have a group of stars which we call actinide boost stars. And it's basically because they are boosted in the actinides compared to the third R process peak elements. So this is the europium over iron, the thorium over iron is a function of europium over iron for some of these R process enhanced stars. And the dashed line here is the solar value. And you see you have this group of stars up here, I think there's about 7 of them, of the R2 stars, which have more thorium than uranium. Europium. And for those where we actually have uranium, these stars, they show the same signature. And one of the, how we discovered these stars by trying to age, determine the age of the stars from the R-process elements. And these stars, some of these stars have a negative age because of this thorium boost. So clearly we have some process which creates this lovely match to the solar system up to the third peak, and then they create a lot of the heavy ones, a lot of the actinides. Doesn't seem to be the one that we've been talking about this week, but some of them must produce a whole lot of these elements to have these boosts. We also have, most of them are the R2 stars, but we also have one down here which is not quite quite soft storm enhanced that also show this boost. So, no, not going to work anymore. OK. So the stars that I've been talking about up until now are all enhanced in the heavy R-process elements. So Europium and those kind of the lanthanides and the heavy ones. But we also have a group of stars that show this light R-process signature. And they're not actually enhanced in R-process elements, but they do show a lot more, they do have a lot more of the light ones compared to the heavy ones. So again, this is the absolute abundances of the first star that was detected of this kind, which we now call the Hunter star, because that's what we do with stars. We name them after the people who discover them. And the, we have the solar system abundance pattern again. And we see this, well, you can call that a boost, but it's not, I mean, it's not enhanced. It just has a lot more of the light ones than it does of the heavy ones. And it, we don't really have this beautiful match to the heavy region as we did for the R2 stars. So it seems like something else is working in these stars, something else enhanced these stars. But clearly something that made R-process elements. And these are even more rare than the R2 stars. So I found about 10 of these stars. And this is the same plot as you saw before, just for these light R-process enhanced stars. So I took the abundances I could find, and then I scaled them all to the solar system Europium abundances, abundance. And, well, you, there's really not much else to say than you see these, lots of these light ones. There seem to be more scatter in the heavy ones, but we don't really have heavy ones for many of them. We mostly just have barium and europium. They do have the heavy ones. I don't know of any ones where we have more than heavier, I mean, where you have actinides, since that's not in the plot, so I couldn't find them. And it's probably also pretty hard because, as I said, they're not enhanced, so they, their lines are not that strong, so we need some very bright stars to do this with. But this is definitely another group of R-process enhanced stars that we need to explore further and see if that can tell us something about a different R-process site than the R2 stars. And then I also just want to mention that we actually measure our, we measure neutron capture elements in all of our stars. So this is strontium, this is plots of strontium and barium as a function of metallicity. These two, strontium and barium, are the easiest neutron capture elements to measure in metal poor stars. And in all the stars where we could measure, where the spectra allowed us, the temperature of the star, the quality of the spectra allowed us to measure strontium or barium, we found it. So we need a neutron capture process that operates at the earliest times in the universe, that, that basically sets in at the same time as core collapse supernovae. Okay, so all of the stars I've talked about so far have been found in the Milky Way halo, but we also find R-process enhanced stars in dwarf galaxies. And I think people maybe noticed this last year when Alex G found this ultra-faint dwarf galaxy called Reticulum 2, where 7 of the 9 stars they analyzed had a huge enhancement in R-process elements. So these are R2 stars. This is an image of the galaxy, and the red circles mark the stars that they analyzed, and then just 3 of them here where you see this very strong Europium feature. These are very old, very well, low star forming systems. They don't have a lot of star formation. They don't have a lot of chemical enrichment. So to build up this kind of europium abundance, you really need some rare event. We don't have a lot of these systems, so the events need to be rare, and you need to eject a lot of R-process elements at once into the system that can enrich the entire galaxy. And neutron star mergers seems to be the only good explanation for that. So this is a really good indicator that neutron star mergers is a site of the R-process. So when they found that, a year later, we found another ultra-faint dwarf galaxy, Tucana 3, where we also found R-process enhanced stars. There's one now, but there's more to come. And that led me to look through the literature and search for R process enhanced stars in dwarf galaxies. And actually, I found quite a few, especially more massive galaxies like Ursa Minor, Draco, and Fornax actually seem to have a decent population of R process enhanced stars. And when we look at the abundance patterns of these stars in the dwarf galaxies, we find the same match as we did for the halo stars. So what you see here is a halo R2 star, so strongly enhanced, a halo R1 star, and a dwarf galaxy R1 and R2 star. And all of these stars show this perfect match to the solar system R process abundance pattern. So we have some event that, independent of the environment where it goes off in, and independent of what level of enhancement it creates this same abundance pattern, this very robust abundance pattern. And so it's very likely that the R2 and R1 stars that we find in the halo probably were born in dwarf galaxies and then accreted into the halo with these systems. Okay, so we know a lot of the R process from these stars, but there are still some open questions. We have this very robust abundance pattern that we see independent of the level of enrichment, independent of the birthplace, but we need to figure out how robust is it, because the abundances that we have are, well, they're precise to some extent, but they're not precise enough to say if there's a small amount of scatter. And we need to figure out what creates the spread in the light abundance, in the light elements and the heavy elements. Where do we get the actinide boost stars from? What's the source of these light R process enhanced stars? Basically, we need to be able to see if we can better quantify, are there different sources of the R process, or is it just the same source that ejects the varying amounts of elements? And also, we need to do the numbers game and say, how many of these R process enhanced stars do we actually have, and how many, if it is neutron star mergers, how many neutron star mergers do we need to match the abundances that we see? How many systems like Reticulum 2 and Ursa Minor do we need to accrete into the halo to build up the population that we have in the Milky Way halo? So some of the answers are going to come from this new survey that we started to look for more of these R process enhanced stars, because we simply do not have enough, and the data we have of them is not good enough. But as I said, they're pretty rare. So what we do is that we select stars that are bright, so we can observe a lot of them in a short time. We select stars that are cold, so we're sure that we can get the full abundance pattern. We select stars that are metal poor, so we're sure that we only see the signature of a few nuclear synthesis events. And then we observe a lot of them. And hopefully, we will find about 75 new R2 stars, so we have a complete sample of about 100. And we've been doing this for about a year now, and this is the result we had from our pilot sample that we did in August last year. And what you see over here is the number of R2 stars in blue and the number of R1 stars in green that we detected in this sample of about 100 stars. And this is a lot. We have 11 R2 stars that we detected, and we have about 50 R1 stars. So compared to previous surveys, we find a lot of them, and that's mainly due to our selection criteria. Two of these are rediscoveries, but we have 9 new R2 stars. And if we look at the brightness of these stars compared to what's been found earlier, then the dashed one here is the previous sample of R2 stars, and these are our stars. So they're all really, really bright. So it will make it easier to get really good spectra of them and get the full abundance pattern. And we can even take them to space and take them to the Hubble and get more abundances. So so we have, this is just the first part of our sample that we've been observing for about a year now. And we have, I think, observed 500 stars that we need to go through and see if there are any interesting targets, which means that I spent a lot of time on this telescope at Las Campanas, the DuPont. And when we then find interesting targets, we take it to the Magellan to get the good spectra. But in a few years, we will have a really large sample of R-process-enhanced stars, where we have the full abundance pattern, both the light, the lanthanides, the heavy, the actinides. We can increase the sample of stars where we actually have thorium and uranium abundances, and we can get a better statistic of how many of these stars are, do we actually have the halo, how many nucleosynthesis events do we need to create this abundance signature. And I'll leave you with my summary. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good question.
So for your variance that you see between, you know, the light and heavy and everything, mm-hmm. that's all based on after normalizing to europium.
Yes.
If you normalize to like thorium or something like that, like, you know, some other thing, do you still see the variance from the light to the heaviest and within those two groups?
So those are some of the things that we need to, I mean,
yeah, right. if you
see this one, we don't have that many thorium measurements. So I haven't actually made the exercise of normalizing to thorium in these stars.
But if you go to the other slide that you had, where you have everything together.
That one. Yeah.
So I'm just, you know, on either side of the plot, is the scatter just because you normalize the europium? But if you normalize to any one of those other things within the scatter, still be as large.
Yeah, so the scatter would still be there in the light and the heavy ones. So if you normalize, if you say you decide to normalize to strontium over here, which is one of those that we have a lot of, you would still not have this match that you see in the middle to the.
Sure, I'm just, you know, like, is that scatter in the light still there?
Yes.
If you normalize,
it is still there.
Okay.
So I'm curious, for the metal poor stars, do these ones with enhanced light R process actually dominate the total mass in R process? Because it looked like each star had a factor of 10 or 30 more mass. So what is the relative rates?
I don't think they do, because they are, so the light R process enhanced stars have in general less of the R process elements than the heavy ones. So these stars have like an enhancement compared to the solar, whereas the light R process enhanced are actually depleted in R process elements compared
to
solar.
It's all this issue of where you're normalizing things.
Sorry?
It's this issue of where you're normalizing. They're enhanced relative to europium, but the absolute abundances are low.
Yeah, but so they're all, it's all relative to the solar ratios, mm-hmm. and these ones have more. So these ones have, if you look at the europium to iron ratio in the sun, we set that to zero. These one has like plus two, whereas the light R process enhanced one has minus 0.5. So they have less in the absolute. You can also see it coming. These are the absolute abundances. These are like 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. And if you go to that one, you have the same scale, but we're at minus one now.
Yeah, okay.
So they have less R-process material in them.
So the other sort of related question is, we like to do the exercise of neutron star merger rate plus 0.05 solar masses per event, optimistic, equals total R process in the galaxy. What would you say is the actual uncertainty on the R process mass in stars, given that most of the spectroscopy isn't for, you know, typical stars?
I think we'll have the next talk. It's probably a better person to answer that, because.
But how many solar type stars do you have good europium abundance measurements for?
Oh, I don't know. Probably quite a few.
Okay.
I look at the metal poor ones because as I said, the solar ones are a mess. But they all have europium. I don't know how many of them actually have measurements, because it's hard when it's so blended.
So I thought, and this is my simplified understanding here, is that the first two R process peaks go hand in hand, and then the lanthanides and the third peak go hand in hand. So I think it's very interesting that, I mean, I think it's that you see the excess in the light end. But what is surprising to me is that you see some where you have perfectly matched lanthanides, but still a huge scatter on the third peak, which I'm not sure I understand physically or what it actually, I mean, I think this is great because that means there's a diversity of, you know, spectra to look forward to of these various counterparts and more fun to be had. But I'm just puzzled that the third peak and the lanthanides don't seem to go as hand in hand as...
Yeah, they don't. Done. But I mean, it's again, so it's again, the coverage we have in the heavy end is slim. So when we get more of them, then we might find that actually most of them do go hand in hand and we have some outliers. I don't know, but at the moment there's some scatter. But these are also the really difficult elements to get, so there are also higher uncertainties in this end.
Well, I think it's conceivable that there's another source for the light elements which contributes and creates some scatter. Do you have any cases where you see the high mass or indications of the high mass elements, but none for the light R process elements? Do you have cases like that? I see in the second one, but it's very hard to read the symbols. Is there any case
if we have the heavy ones, so if we have the lanthanides and those over here, we always also have the light ones.
That's interesting.
I don't think we have any cases where we only have the heavy ones.
Uh-huh. If you find such a case with a larger statistics, that would really be interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask about the possibility of needing some other mechanism besides mergers for the very, very metal poor stars.
I think we definitely do need a second mechanism.
And so I wanted to understand the reasoning. Is it just a question of getting the mergers early enough, or is it the scatter? Do you need events that only make a little?
So it's both the time scale of it, because...
The time scale is attached to iron. I mean, that doesn't mean you measure the time, you measure the iron abundance.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
I mean, what you need is not an early event, you need an event which makes R process in a metal poor environment, which can well be mergers if kicks move mergers out of the site where the supernova produced the iron. I mean, a binary neutron star will have a kick, and a binary neutron star will merge in a situation where there is potentially no indication of a previous supernova. So I wouldn't see that there's any clear argument for me that you cannot do it with mergers, not at the moment at least. Maybe you with more data and more convincing evidence, but you always say that you always use iron over hydrogen as if it were time. It's not time.
It's not time. It's an indicator of time.
No, it's not even an indicator of time. It's an indicator of some no-metallicity environment which can come from different conditions.
Yes. But I do believe that we have stars that have the light elements and not the heavy ones. This is something that we're working on, trying to see how low an upper limit we can get. Because, I mean, saying that there's absolutely no europium, it's hard, but we can get very, very low limits on the heavy ones. And if we can find a star that has some of the light ones and not the heavy ones, the question is if we can do that with a neutron star merger.
So that would be another mechanism for the light R process.
Yeah.
And so the question is, do you need another mechanism for the heavy R process?
I don't know if we need multiple ones for the heavy ones.
I mean, we have models, supernova models, the light stars produce ejecta which expand very rapidly and have a chance to make light R process elements.
Yeah.
I would say that our models are very close to giving a source for the light ones from a supernova case. Yeah.
I think that the ion production rate, of course, is determined by the star formation rate history. So if the Milky Way galaxy is formed by merger of dwarf, small dwarf galaxies, then clock may be easily changed, time, the relation between time and ion over age, FE over age. So I agree with Thomas.
Yeah.
But we need more work on the galaxy formation, actually.
Yeah.
I want to ask Thomas for this comment. So if you say supernova produce a lighter Alpros element, then I expect some universal ratio between, for example, iron and or alpha element to light Alpros element. Do you expect constant ratio for alpha and light Alpros element for the supernova scenario?
That's true. I mean, maybe an indication of the supernova source, you have a certain iron production in the events. So you wouldn't make, well, if you think of canonical supernovae or not of some very strange events which have been suggested, like jet-like supernovae, where I don't see how you cannot produce iron in such events. People have claimed that MHD explosions might not produce iron, but I don't see that, honestly. I don't understand that claim, because I think whenever you produce a shock and shock heats material in a supernova explosion, you will produce some nickel or iron moving out. So yes, you would expect a low iron abundance associated with the light R-process elements, yeah, for the supernova cases, for these low mass stars, which I have in mind to make the light R-process elements, you would see some iron, yeah. So if you have light R-process elements at extremely metal poor conditions, then it becomes hard for a supernova. You have to hide the iron somewhere, and I don't understand the models for the jet supernovae which have been proposed.
Another question?
For your R2 stars that you're finding now, when you find one, do you look at the stars nearby to see if there are other ones?
Not so far. But when we get Gaia data, then we might do something like that. So these are all in the halo. So, I mean, stars nearby is a little...
Sure, but I mean, like, if Reticulum 2 wasn't found...
But if...
And instead you found an R2 star and then you just looked nearby.
Yeah.
Right? There's got to be some spatial correlation of these stars.
Exactly. And as I said, when we get Gaia data, so all the stars that we find in our new survey are so bright that they will all be covered by Gaia, and then we can probably pair them together and say these five stars came from the same system.
Okay. I have a naive question. So you focus on R1, R2, but you have more star with less europium over iron. Mm-hmm. Do you still see a small variation in lanthanoid or no data?
The problem with the R1 stars is that they're not strongly enhanced enough that we get a full abundance pattern. So it's hard, and people haven't really, a lot of the literature data has europium and barium strontium, and that's it. You can't do anything with that in terms of the patterns and variations. All we see is that there seems to be this same, roughly same abundance pattern. But also the division of the R2 and R1 was originally the R2 stars were only found at small middle-ish terrains around -3, so people thought that had some significance, but we find them all the way up to -1.5. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be just a survey bias, basically. Okay.
There were a lot of elements that went by here fairly fast, but one of the things that I think you mentioned is the uranium to thorium as a clock.
Yes.
And then you said something like there are stars with too much thorium and it's as if the radioactivity goes backwards or something. So
yes.
Could you just say a little bit more about that? Or less.
Well, so
so are there any clocks?
Yeah, so thorium to uranium is a clock. Thorium to europium is also a clock. And for the stars that doesn't have this actinide boost, that doesn't have this boost in the thorium and uranium abundances, they actually give ages of the stars, which is comparable to the age of the universe.
Right, so what's the lower bound on the age?
I'm not actually sure.
This is a huge uncertainty margin. So, I think A to 16 or something. It's really.
Well, okay. So
still get the right power.
We're in ballpark.
Thorium to europium, can you explain? One of those is unstable?
Thorium is unstable, right?
Okay, what's the half-life? I don't actually.
Sorry?
What's the half-life?
It's long. It's very long. Okay. I don't.
Okay. But it's in there. Okay, I didn't realize
it has been used as a cloth when people can't get uranium.
Any other question? Okay, so let's thank Teresa again.
Yes, so we'll take a half-hour break now. We'll resume at 10:45. The coffee is in. And so we will resume at 10:45 for the rest of the morning talks. Thank you.